Translation. When the demigod named Brihaspati was attracted by his brother's wife, Mamata, who at that time was pregnant, he desired to have sexual relationship with her. The sun within her womb forbid this, but Brihaspati cursed him and forcibly discharged semen into the womb of Mamata. Purport. The sex impulse is so strong in this material world that even Brihaspati, who is supposed to be the priest of the demigods and a very learned scholar, wanted to have a sexual relationship with his brother's pregnant wife. This can happen even in the society of the higher demigods. So what to speak of human society? The sex impulse is so strong that it can agitate even a learned personality like Brihaspati. Omagya tumanandasya dinandina salakaya chaksuram belitam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vancha Kalpatu Bhustya Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Vatitananam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. So this verse we are reading today is a typical example of life's complications in the material world with body, mind, and senses. The astonishing thing about this verse, as mentioned by Srila Prabhupada, is that even Brihaspati, who is considered a very elevated and well-controlled sage, has fallen down in such a manner that he has disrespected his brother, himself, and his brother's wife. So Prabhupada is pointing out here that even in the higher realms of life, which mentions here in the heavenly varshas, even great personalities like Bhrigu Muni can fall down. Bhrigu Muni himself is explained to be one of those particular munis who was very, very self-controlled. And even he, when he saw Hiranyakashipu performing his austerities, he was quite surprised by the austerities of Hiranyakashipu. So at that time he commented on how Hiranyakashipu, that even though he was a demon, because he wanted something so much, he performed such vigorous austerities. I think it was standing on his toes and with his hands in the air. And in this way, I think it was for many thousands of years. So Therefore, Prabhupada is pointing out that even if so, such personalities like Brigham Muni can fall down in regards to sexual relationships, then what to speak of us? So therefore, the main objective in all spiritual practices by all transcendentalists is to somehow or other come to the point of controlling the mind and the senses and engaging the body in transcendental activities. So there's a few verses that we can read from the Bhagavad Gita in regards to this. This is in chapter 2, verse 61. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. One who restrains his senses and fixes his consciousness upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment lust develops, and from lust anger arises. From anger delusion arises, and from delusion bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. One who has controlled his senses by regulated practice and who is freed from attachment and aversion can obtain the mercy of God. This is in chapter 3, text 43. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to material senses, mind, and intelligence, one should control the lower self by the higher self, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. And in chapter 5, text 22, an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 5, text 5, Rishabhdev is instructing his sons. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living, and engages in all kinds of sensual activities. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which is, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. And in Srila Prabhupada's purport, he's pointing out begging, borrowing, and stealing in life for sense gratification is condemned in this verse because such consciousness leads one to a dark, hellish condition. The four sinful activities are illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. These are the means by which one gets another material body that is full of misery. In the Vedas, it is said, the living entity is not really connected with this material world, but due to his tendency to enjoy the material senses, he is put into the material condition. One should perfect his life by associating with devotees. He should not become further implicated in the material body. So we have seen through history that the basis of all life is sense gratification. And although our leaders should be examples, we have seen in the past that one leader may represent one kind of leadership and another leader may represent another kind of leadership. But the basis of most activities, even amongst the leaders, is sense gratification. But Prabhupada is pointing out that sense gratification in this way, enjoying the senses, that is being done by the animals themselves. And therefore, in the human form of life, we have an opportunity to control the senses and perfect our life and return back home, back to Godhead. And he also points out the fact that there are some animals that have very sophisticated senses. He mentions especially the eagle. The eagle has the ability to fly 5 miles high in the sky and look down and see a dead corpse. So very sophisticated eyes that he can see from such a distance a dead corpse, and then he comes down and picks it up. And then there's there's the blackbird. I think it's the blackbird, but there's one bird, it's black. I know it's at least it's a blackbird, and I watch it sometimes from the window. And it usually early in the morning is wandering around in the garden. And he's moving here, moving there, and you're wondering, what is he actually doing? Moving here, moving there? But what he's actually doing is listening to worms underneath the ground. He has such sophisticated hearing that he will hear the worm moving. And so he's going like this. And when he hears the worm, he stops. And then he will peck with his beak into the earth and pull out the worm. I've seen this many times. You must have seen yourself. But sophisticated ears for eating. It's only for eating. I'm using my ears so I can get some worms from underneath the ground. And then there's the lizard. The lizard has the ability to, it has a long tongue, so it elongates its tongue to catch an insect which is flying in the air. So again, sophisticated tongue, but it's used for sense gratification, just to eat something. So the point that Prabhupada is making that, so what? Here in the human form of life, we now have these senses, and we're making so many arrangements for sophisticated sense gratification. We not only use one sense at a time, but we now have learned how to use all senses at one time. So this is the height of human endeavor to sophisticate our senses in such a way that we can engage all of them at one go and try to squeeze some pleasure and enjoyment. And the consequences, as we mentioned here by Rishabhdev, he said one becomes mad and it leads to a hellish condition. And it is also mentioned, we pray every day when taking prasad, that of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and difficult to control. That tongue is used for two purposes. One is to speak and the other is to eat. And therefore, as devotees, we have to be very vigilant in how we use the tongue, especially the tongue, because from the tongue then all other sense gratifications take place. So the tongue is the most difficult and voracious of all the senses, and therefore our talking should be Krishna katha, and our eating should only be eating of foods that are offered to Krishna. These are two very important practices that we have within Krishna consciousness. And we must endeavor to abide by those practices as much as possible. Although sometimes the talking is very difficult. Perhaps eating is not such a bad. We have so many facilities nowadays for respecting prasadam. But the talking is also something we must learn to control too. One time Prabhupada heard some of his servants. Prabhupada's servants usually were in the room next to him. He was somewhere, I think it was in India, and he heard his servants talking prajalpa. So he came out and he said, "What is this bajalpa? This talking bajalpa will ruin everything. Will ruin whatever advancement that has been made within Krishna consciousness. So you should sit down and learn some Bhagavad Gita slokas and chant good 16 rounds. So we have to practice these devotional practices in order to come to the point of being able to control the tongue in such a way that it is only used in Krishna's service." I remember even before I was a devotee, and I always, for some reason, I still remember it, and it was a very there was a television program called Candid Camera, and you probably know this. They have this camera set up in such a way that they film people and observe their different activities. In light of the camera being present. So they had made one shop window. They had filled the shop window with all delicate kind of sweets. It was arranged in such a way that even if you were passing, you were in a hurry, you would anyway stop at this window and look at the arrangement within the window. And then at that point, the camera would zoom up to the mouth, and then the mouth would start to open, and the tongue would start to drool out of the mouth. And almost in some cases, you could literally see the tongue sticking out 10 feet, dragging that person into the shop to purchase some sweets. So it was very revealing at that time, and I wasn't even a devotee. But it was interesting that they had made this observation that by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops an attachment for those things which we are concentrating on. And from that attachment, one develops a desire to enjoy. So this is the way in which the senses work. So in all, as I mentioned, in all transcendental practices, one has to somehow come to the point of controlling. But there are different ways in which different practitioners control the senses. The jnanis, they control their senses in an artificial way by assuming that everything in the world is false. So therefore, what I'm seeing is false, and therefore I will reject it. That is the way in which the jnanis control their senses. But unfortunately, not in every case are they able to do that, because it's an endeavor which they must acquire themselves. It is their own personal endeavor to control the senses by rejecting the objects and the things around them, and ultimately rejecting the world, saying that it is false. And you have the yogis who practice meditation. They're also meditating from out of their own personal endeavors. It is not an easy feat to, through meditation, to control the senses. But in that artificial way, they make their endeavor. But again, in most cases, most yogis, even if they acquire some transcendental perfection, sometimes mystic yogis, in fact, Bhaktisiddhanta mentioned one mystic yogi who was able to elongate his arm. That was his mystic perfection. And as he elongated his arm across one river, he lit up his chillum so that he could smoke his chillum. So Bhaktisiddhanta pointed out that you may acquire some mystic perfection, but if it's used for sense gratification, then what is the use? He said, if you churn milk, you get yogurt. But if you churn whitewash is the paint which you put on before the actual final coat of paint. It's called whitewash. If you churn whitewash, you do not get anything from churning whitewash. Right? So using your mystic perfections and meditation for sense gratification doesn't get you anywhere. And then there's even some practices in India which is called Mounavrata. There are some sects that practice Mounavrata for the purpose of not being able to not speak, to control the tongue by not speaking. But Prabhupada, again, he pointed this out, that this is all artificial. You have a tongue and it must be used. If you're using the tongue for prajalpa, then yes, don't speak anything. Practice Mounavrata. But even practicing Mounavrata today cannot be performed like it used to be previously. They would use, to communicate, they will use blackboards and notepads to communicate whatever it is that they want to others. So that's not Mounavrata in the true sense of the word Mounavrata. So this way, if we analyze the different ways in which the transcendentalists try to engage or control, engage their activities in and sense control. It is artificial. It is their own personal endeavors which mostly end up in defeat. In Krishna consciousness, we have one added ingredient. We make our endeavor, not that we make no endeavor, we make our own endeavor. We use our mind and our senses in the service of Krishna, within devotional service. This is called yukta vairagya, that for ourselves we don't want anything, but for the pleasure of Krishna, we'll give him the best. One time, Prabhupada was arriving. He had arrived at the airport in Los Angeles, and there was a, what do you call this when reporters meet and press conference. There was a press conference. And the reporters were asking Prabhupada different questions. And at one point, one reporter inquired from Prabhupada, "You have one big Cadillac, was it? Cadillac car outside waiting for you to take you to the temple. Why do you have such a big car? You are supposed to be a sadhu or renounced person." So, you know, sometimes reporters are like that. They like to make some tricky questions to see the reaction. And Prabhupada dealt with this particular question in the finest, I would say, the finest possible way. He said, "Well, actually, Krishna deserves better. But because this is all you have to offer, I'm using it in his service." I'll say that again. It's so wonderful. "Well, this is all you have to offer. Because this is all you have to offer, I'm using it in Krishna's service. But Krishna deserves much better." So there's nothing that we cannot give to Krishna. This is the reason why we have a sikha, by the way. I always wondered for many, many years what the purpose of a sikha was. In the old days, we were informed, well, this is how Krishna, you know, takes you back home. He grabs you by the sikha and he takes you back home. But at one point, I heard one devotee giving a class many years ago, and he explained the actual reason why we have a sikha. And he pointed out that for Mayavadis, they shave their heads completely because their mood, as I mentioned, is full renunciation. They don't want to serve God, but they want to become God. So they address themselves as Om Namo Narayan. "You are Narayan, I am Narayan, the doorknob is Narayan, Om Namo Narayan." Yeah? But sorry, I lost my line. What was I saying? Sikha, yeah. So they shave their heads completely for the point of they want no, you know, full renunciation, 100% renunciation. So we also shave our head. We shave our head, but we keep the sikha. We renounce for ourselves. For ourselves, we don't want anything. But for Krishna, which is the sikha, this represents, this symbolizes the sikha, that we will give Krishna everything. There's nothing that is enough for Krishna. So in one sense, the devotees are the biggest sense gratifiers because we're not satisfied until everything is offered to Krishna. We want the national libraries. We want the palaces. We want Buckingham Palace. We want this. There's so many buildings out there that are being used for sense gratification. So we want to turn all these buildings into using them for the service of the Lord. When we go to London, so it's always very interesting when I go to the London Temple. Because in London Temple, it is very difficult to sleep at night if you're not used to sleeping there. And I asked the devotees, how do you sleep here? And they said, well, it's fine. I said, well, what about all the noise outside? I said, what noise? Huh? What noise? So they don't even hear the noise. They don't hear. They're so absorbed in devotional service. They don't hear anything. Only thing they hear is their service, their katha, Krishna katha, taking prasad, associating with each other. So this is an example of being in an environment where ordinarily it would be impossible to control the senses and the mind. But yet in devotional service, and everything is used in Krishna's service, then everything is transformed. It becomes transcendental. The senses become illuminated with knowledge, and the mind becomes peaceful, and the body is very active in devotional service. So therefore, this actually is the epitome of peace. There was once a king, he wanted to have a picture. He had just decorated his new chamber, and he wanted to put a picture in the chamber, which was the epitome of peace. So he asked all the artists in the land, please, I want you all to paint a picture which depicts peace. And then you bring to me and I will pick the best picture and put in my chamber. So all the artists, they got there. They started their painting, and after some time all the artwork was done and it was presented to the king. So the king picked two paintings out of all the artists' paintings. Two paintings were initially picked by the king. One painting was a painting that you could say, by looking at the picture, it was the epitome of peace. It was a nice, calm sea, the mountain in the background, which was full of vegetation. It was a nice sunset. There was just everything about the picture would resemble a peaceful environment. And then the other picture was completely opposite. This other picture, it was a stormy day, first of all. The wind was blowing. It was raining. And there was also a sea, but the sea was rough. There was a mountain, but there was no vegetation on the mountain. There was a waterfall hitting the water, making ripples within the water. Everything about this particular picture did not resemble peace at all. Except for the fact that within the mountain, just behind the waterfall, there was one tree that had been able to grow from within the rocks. And then within that tree, there was a nest. And on top of the nest, there was a bird. He was peacefully resting. And the king said, I will pick this picture for my chamber. Because although the environment is rough and nothing to do with peace, but this bird is very peaceful even within that environment. So this is an example of how within Krishna consciousness, it doesn't really matter where we are. It doesn't really matter where we are and what engagement we perform. Providing it is connected with Krishna, then we are in the exact environment for peace, for tranquility, for spiritual awakening, and in that sense, we make no conditions. So this is a unique opportunity for us as devotees. Not that we make all kinds of excuses, because that's generally what the mind will try to suggest. Well, you know, it's Kali Yuga, and you know, I am this, and I'm from England, and I am my senses are very, very uncontrolled. We give many, many excuses as to my environment. I'm living here in London. It's the environment around me is not conducive for my spiritual life. I have to also work in a factory that is also not. And we can make a list and list and list and list of excuses as to why we cannot perfect our Krishna consciousness. But all these excuses are actually nullified just because of the fact that there is nothing that comes in the way of devotional service. That devotional service is a practice that can be done anywhere in any place by anyone. So we say hardships to perfection. Actually, we don't mind hardships. We don't mind inconveniences. In fact, we can also turn inconveniences, we can also turn obstacles, so-called obstacles, into favorable situations. That they're not actually inconveniences at all. They're not obstacles at all, but rather they're opportunities by which I can further my advancement in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, Prabhupada did actually say several times that we should voluntarily accept inconveniences for Krishna, because those very inconveniences will be the means by which Krishna himself and the Guru and Krishna will see the level of your sincerity. And this is the other point which I want to make, that whereas all the other transcendentalists, they are trying to achieve perfection through their own endeavor, we make our little endeavor. We are achievers. We try to achieve perfection. So we are achievers. But at the same time, we are also receivers. We are receivers of the grace that comes from above. So we make, on one side, we make our effort. We work in such a way that everything depends on us. But at the same time, we pray in such a way that everything depends on Krishna, Guru and Krishna. So as it say, if one has implicit faith in the spiritual master and Krishna, then all the imports of the Vedas will be revealed. All inconveniences, all difficulties, whether it's mind, body, senses, that will also be automatically achieved. It's like an automatic car. You put it in the right position, then the car moves from one gear to the next automatically. if we follow the four regulative principles, chant our 16 rounds, and engage in devotional practices and try to give Krishna consciousness to others, then there is every guarantee. Prabhupada has mentioned in so many letters, there is every guarantee that no matter what, who you are and what circumstance you're in, you will achieve the perfection of life, attain Krishna consciousness and go back home, back to Godhead, even within this lifetime. So we have a great opportunity to achieve this perfection. Just our only price that we pay is that we must be vigilant in our practices. One moment of inattention can ruin years and years and years of practices of our endeavor to perfection. One moment of inattention. So we must be vigilant. That is the price. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is easy and it's free, but there is one price, and that is to what degree we're eager, our eagerness to achieve the perfection and go back home, back to Godhead. So we have everything to gain, nothing to lose. Let's try our best and wait then for the grace of Guru and Krishna. So I'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam class ki, Nitai Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.